Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham podcast. We hope this message will be informative, inspirational, and helpful. Donations to support this work are greatly appreciated. Visit www.cslbellingham.org and click on the donate button. Remember to share our podcast. Thank you.
Good morning, beloved community. Oh, gorgeousness. My name's Taffy Wallace. I'm a new practitioner here. Thank you. So I'm your practitioner of the day and really throughout the week. If you see any of us in the white stoles, if you're new here, we're available for prayer for you. We also have a wonderful written prayer vessel in the back if you want to write out a prayer. And also, there's a 7 a.m. every morning that I'll be anchoring throughout the week if you want to begin your day in the glory of affirmative prayer. So now, with that being said and established, let's turn within, closing your eyes if you feel comfortable in doing so, and just lingering in that vibration that is so palpable. The presence, the power, the joy of spirit, God, the thing itself. It is here now because it is everywhere at all times. So I know and claim into this law of mind and spirit that always says yes to me that today is a glorious day, that today is a day in which we rejoice. We have gotten ourselves here into a spiritual life, starting our week off in community, in love, in sacred spirituality. I know that the music uplifts us. I know that whatever we brought in here in our hearts and minds is fulfilled as we revel in the teaching beloved Reverend Abigail brings forth for us this day, joy, power, and all is well. So I allow this word to be. And amen.
You know, it's so interesting because, so Lisa Ferraro and Erika Luckett wrote that song, and Erika has transcended this planet, and she is now in the non-physical realm. And I was listening to that song on the way in, and I didn't realize Tabor had picked it for this service, so. How many of you have ever had a fight with your thermostat? I had this happen to me the other day. I set it for 70 because I was cold. And I'm like, oh, it's cold an hour later. And I go back and I look at the thermostat and it's at 62. And so I set it at 70 again and come back an hour later and it's at 62. Have you ever had that happen? It happens because there's another program running behind the program that I was putting it on. There is a program that's already programmed into the thermostat that it defaults back to at a certain time. And it kept doing that to me. But it reminded me that it's just like our subconscious belief system. So we say, oh, I have this affirmation. My affirmation is at 70 degrees, right? And then there's a subconscious belief system that's working in the background that is counter to that. It puts back at 62. And so I find that very interesting because this is what we teach. We teach that we have the ability to transform our lives. And at the same time, there is something underneath that's operating oftentimes that we're completely unaware of. And that's what I want to bring to light and uncover and talk about today. There's a set point. And if we start asking the question, what if there's something else going on? What if I'm ready to recalibrate that set point? What if there's something else possible for me? And what if there has been something running in the background of my own life that I haven't been looking at? So our monthly theme is what if. And my talk today is traveling in a world of my creation. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm Reverend Abigail Shire, and my pronouns are she and her, and my ancestry hails from Prussia, Ireland, and Germany. And so I honor all of my ancestors because I'm able to be here today with you because of them, and I also honor the Coast Salish people whose land I'm here to honor with them. And I know that something sacred and holy is happening here in this place. But it begins with curiosity. It begins with that question of what if. So I want to go ahead and just start off with a grounding practice. If you could just put your hand over your heart, take in a deep breath, in, out. Let your shoulders drop for a minute. If your jaw is clenched, let your jaw unclench. Recognize that you belong here exactly as you are. And I want you to ask yourself with your hand over your heart, without judgment, what world am I in right now? Not the one on the outside, but the inner working. Do you notice that there is tightness, or do you notice that there's spaciousness? Do you notice that you're feeling heavy or that you're feeling light? And can you just notice without changing it, without fixing it, just being aware? All right, bring yourself back into the room and know that this is one of the simplest practices you'll ever do, is noticing where you're at, having your awareness of what is, and knowing you can shift your awareness to a new possibility. There's an old story from the Sufi tradition, which is the mystical aspect of Islam. And you might have heard this story before because it's one of my favorites. There was a traveler who arrives at the gates of a great city. And he asks, "What are the people like here?" to an old man. And the old man responds to him, "Well, what are the people like where you left?" And he said, "Oh God, they were terrible people. They were so selfish and self-centered, and they were just really annoying, and I could not get out of here fast enough. And the old man says, "Well, you're going to find the same kind of people here." So the traveler moved on, and another traveler stopped outside and talked to the old man. And he said, "What kind of people live here?" And the old man said to him, "Well, what were the people like where you came from?" And he said, "Oh my God, it was such a great group of people. I loved them so much. It was just so community oriented, and people came together and they saw each other and everybody pitched in, and it was amazing." And the old man said, "Oh, well, you're going to love it here. The people are like that here too." And so he went into the gates and he loved the place where he was at. And I love that story because it shows that each of us have a framework or an idea of something before we come in, or something that we carry around with us in our life, kind of like a lens. How many of you wear glasses or contact lenses? Quite a few. Now imagine your glasses or contact lenses are a few years old, and you're looking through old lenses. And they create the framework of how you're seeing, which I think is really interesting. And if we don't update or upgrade our framework or the lens that we're seeing through, we still see through those old lenses. And so this is an opportunity for us to look at, what is my framework that I'm looking through? You know, one of the things that's really interesting that they've discovered is that the subconscious mind processes, I think it's 40 million bits of information. Yes, okay. 40 million bits of information per second. 40 million per second. The subconscious mind does that. The conscious mind processes 40 bits of information per second. So 95% of what we're operating on is the subconscious mind. And it is creating something for our lives. And the only way to shift and change that is to bring it to light, is to bring it to our awareness. And when we bring it to our awareness, it gives us the ability to be able to shift and change it. But oftentimes, we're not even looking at that. We're not even willing to discover what's operating in the background. And it's still going to be that thermostat set at 62 unless we say, wait, there's something operating in the background set at 62 when I want it to be at 70. The interesting part of this, Bruce Lipton, he's one of the people I really am interested in. I follow his work. He researches epigenetics. And so 95% of our programs actually were started ages 0 to 7 years old.
How do you take this off?
Oh, she's taking it off.
Here. Can you do it over your head?
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Boy, that must have been really annoying. That's my wife, everybody. She's taking care of all of you. So anyway, 95% of the programs that we run into our life were installed before we were 7 years old. Seven. And so we're operating off of a seven-year-old mentality. Unless we're willing to see it and change it. It makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? So Ernest Holmes, who is the founder of Science of Mind, which is what we teach here, he said, the world is not something that happens to us, it's something that happens through us. And so we bring to the world our own framework, our own lens, our own history and culture. And we also bring something that's underneath all of that, which is that sacred and holy spot within us that is our part, our expression of source, which is a place that's never been hurt or damaged. It's whole. It's filled with abiding love, completely non-judgmental. And that place we can operate from, we can either operate from that deep place that's underneath it all, or we can operate from the consciousness of where we came from. So I want you to realize that you're not a passive receiver of reality. You are, whether you intend it or not, a co-creator of this world, of this experience. Gina wanted to co-create a world that was easier for you to hear from. So sit with these questions. Ask yourself this. What world have I been traveling in lately? What does it feel like in my body to live in that world? What beliefs about myself are so old and familiar that I've stopped noticing them? What program installed before age 7 am I ready to update? So now I want to take you to some place a little bit deeper. And what if the world that you've been traveling in, the tight parts, the not enough parts, the parts that feel like walls, wasn't even built by you? What if you inherited some of those things? The furniture was handed down to you. I have a friend, and he told me this story. He said that he bought this house, and it had blackberries. And the blackberries were very invasive, and they had actually walked up the wall of his house and was trying to get into the windows. It was like, And so he was out there, and he was like pulling all the blackberries out, and he's pulling all, and he was like so angry. He was so mad for a while. And he's like, I didn't plant these blackberries. But then something dawned on him. Like, he didn't plant the blackberries, but the house was his now. And while he didn't plant them, it was his to make it in a way that was supportive and easy and effortless. It was his work to do to pull the blackberries out. So even though we might have a world where we didn't plant the blackberries, what is ours to do? How do we want the world to be? Because we may have inherited it in a certain way, but maybe we want to have a place without thorns that that doesn't create hassle or encroach and eat our house up. And maybe it's worth getting stuck by a couple of those thorns because how he wants to create the vision of his home, of what that looks like. So that's not just with your own life, which of course it applies to your own life. It applies to this particular community. It applies to this particular country. It applies to this particular planet that we're existing on. And you can use it in all of those different frameworks of what I would like to have. There's a story from the Indian epic, the Mahabharata, about a warrior named Karna. And this warrior was extraordinary. He was an amazing man. He was noble, generous. He was fierce with his integrity. And even the divine fire of the sun would live in his being. But he had a story about himself that kept him down. And see, what he didn't know is that when he was born of nobility. He was born to a queen. And the queen wanted to protect him. And she couldn't keep him around. So what she did is she put him down a river, hoping somebody would pick him up, which somebody did. And it was a very wonderful man. It was a charioteer man. And the man who had picked him up was born of the lowest caste in India. And way back in the day in India, whatever caste you were born in, you were there forever. You can never rise up above your caste. There was no opportunity. And people treated you. So he was in the lowest caste, so he was treated as if he was part of the lowest caste. And all his life, he was trying to prove himself to everybody because this wonderful man who brought him up only had the context of the lowest caste, and so that's what he kept trying to prove. He kept trying to say, but I need to show people who I am, but people treated him badly. And he never embodied who he truly was because he bought into the framework of that caste system. He allowed it to frame his life. And it wasn't even until the very end of his life that Karna found out that he was born of noble blood, that he was born of nobility. But I kind of think that's like us. Each person here, each person online, we're all born of noble blood. We're born of the infinite great creator itself. It birthed all of us. And each and every one of us is sacred and holy with a divine birthright if we are willing to claim it and to say that it is ours. Not to be better than anybody else, but just to be in our divine inheritance of who we truly are. Imagine how the world would be if we all claimed that we were of holy blood. Everybody. There's that story of the, there was a monastery, and the monastery was suffering. It was doing a really terrible job. And people kept, they were just getting older and older, and there was no new life to it. And there was a passerby who came through the monastery, and this was a wise man who came through the monastery, and one of the priests was like, we really need some help here. And the wise old man who came through, he said, oh, well, this place is an amazing place. He said, one of you is the Christ. One of you is the Christ. And then they were like, well, which one? And he said, I'm not going to say anything else. And he moves on. And so then the people in the monastery was like, who's the Christ? Who is it? What if you're the Christ, Taffy? What if you're the Christ, Ian? You know, what if you're the Christ, Phyllis? How would I treat you? And they started treating each other like the holiness of who they are. And soon they started drawing in more people because they were like, oh my God, something amazing is happening there. And more people start coming in and thriving because they all started treating each other as if they were the Christ. See, I think that that's the paradigm that I want to live from, where I get to see the Christ in everybody I meet. And by the way, I think I said this at the Christmas Eve service, but I'll say it again, that I'm not talking about Jesus. They called Jesus the Christed One because he was the embodiment of expressing love on earth. And so anybody could be called the Christ. And people were, way before Jesus' time, also called the Christ. So it's not his last name, just so you know. It's the embodiment of our pure potentiality. So I wonder, what story have you accepted as truth that might be inherited? And who gave you that story? How old were you when you heard that first story? And what would it mean, or what would it be like if that story wasn't true? If Karna had understood that he was nobility. Instead, his whole life he thought of himself as the lowest caste. And many of us think that of ourselves. There's one more story I wanted to tell you about, which is about medieval map makers. So medieval map makers, when they were creating their cartographers, is what they were called, when they were creating the maps, there was kind of like, this is what I know, and then there was this kind of like outside of what they knew. And on those maps, it would say, here be dragons, because it was outside of their known reality. And the good news is that people actually sailed beyond the boundaries of known reality and discovered that there weren't actually monsters there, but there were other lands and other people there. But oftentimes, we prohibit ourselves from going beyond that threshold because we're like, oh, well, I don't know what's out there. I don't know what that next thing is. This is a place where dragons are because it's unknown. And maybe the dragons are just made up things that the cartographers did because they didn't know what was out there. So I want to do a little closed eyes exercise with you. So close your eyes or soften your gaze towards the floor. I want you to take 3 breaths, each one slower than the last. With each exhale, let something go. Let go of something from this week. Let go of the noise. And imagine you're standing inside of a room. This room is your inner world right now. And look around. Is your room bright? Is it dim? Is it spacious? Is it cluttered? Don't judge, just notice. This is just information. But I want you to pull your attention to one of the walls where there's a window. and look through this window, and in this window, as you look through it, outside of it is a different world. This is the version of your life where you're known, where you're welcomed, where you're fully expressed. What does it look like? What quality of aliveness exists there? And breathe that feeling in, all the way in. Let your nervous system register. This is real. This is possible. This exists for me. All right, so I want you to breathe out, open your eyes, and bring that feeling back into the room with you here, into this day. So what you did right now is not wishful thinking. What you did is you created a powerful version of your truth. See, Joe Dispenza does research on our minds and how they affect reality. And this research shows that the brain doesn't distinguish between a fully vividly imagined experience and reality. So your nervous system practiced you living into the fullness of who you are. So this is what we teach. This is science of mind. This is also neuroscience. It's also quantum physics as we go deeper. But the beauty of this is when this teaching was founded, none of those sciences were out there. People were practicing this stuff and finding amazing results in their life and in their communities as they were imagining new possibilities. So that's where I invite you to take this question. What if? What if I sailed beyond my known boundaries? What if I was fully expressed in my life? What if my thermostat would stay at 70? What else is possible? So what I want you to do is I want you to do some practices. So every morning, I invite you to practice the what if question. We'll be exploring what if all month long. And just ask some what if questions. Here's the deal, though. Don't find the answer. Just ask the questions. Just ask some what if questions. Because the beautiful thing about the universe is it creates the solution. And all you have to do is ask the question. So what if you explored that? And whenever your critic is speaking, ask yourself, is this somebody else's voice? Is this something I learned when I was 7 or younger? Is this a world that I inherited? Or is this the truth of my being speaking? And I can pretty much tell you, if it's critical, it is not the truth of your being speaking. If it is loving and kind and inspiring, that is the true voice. That is your voice. That is the voice of the infinite that loves you deeply and cherishes every aspect of you, exactly as you are and exactly as you're not. So in January, we planted some roots. In February, we walked the edges. And in March, we're asking the question, what if? So I invite you to join me on this adventure throughout the month, knowing that we have Reverend Dawn, who's speaking next week. I will be here in the community because I said, what if I had a community that I got one Sunday off of speaking a month so I could spend a little bit more time getting to know the community? And the board said yes. So I encourage you to come next week. And I encourage you to use the spiritual, sacred technology we have, knowing that our world is a world of pure imagination. What if we created something that we loved? And so it is.